And now, from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, it's Mike Malloy. Well, hello, everybody. It is the 17th of, just look at the clock here. Oh, okay, that's right. 17th of September. Hey, fall happens when? Saturday? I think it's Saturday, Friday or Saturday. Isn't that wonderful? It is the 17th of September, 2018. My name is Mike Malloy. Thank you for joining us. And this is a podcast that we do most nights. I think we will have one for you tomorrow, but don't count on it because our daughter has a performance in downtown Atlanta. And there's some events during the day that are going to prohibit us from recording during the day. So if you get a rebroadcast tomorrow night, not to worry. It's just the way it is. All right? All right. Now, later on tonight, probably the second hour, I'll get into the horror that has hit the Carolinas. The number of dead continues to rise. It's a terrible situation. If you were curious, I told you that my son and daughter-in-law and two grandchildren lived in Charleston, just outside of Charleston. And Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, which is, you know, part of the Charleston complex. And they fled. They packed up the kids and the dog and took off. Went south, which made a lot of sense, and had a great time. 3 or 4 days on the beach in Florida, did some sightseeing, and went back to their home this afternoon. And he texted me and said, everything is dry as a bone. So, and not just him, but his neighbors and the people in Mount Pleasant. The odd part is Mount Pleasant, I didn't realize this. I knew the name of the place was Mount Pleasant, but this is low country, South Carolina. There are no mountains there. There are not even any hills that I'm aware of. But he said the elevation of Mount Pleasant is just enough above sea level to ward off tidal surges and storm surges and so on and so forth. So he managed to luck through it, but so many people in South Carolina who have lost family members in their homes, their property. They're dealing with no cell service, no electrical service, no internet service, nothing. And one of the things I'll bring up next hour is the Interior Department, run by one of Trump's bad boys, Ryan Zinke, another criminal. They are expanding their order to supervisors of state parks and – or not state parks, but national parks, national seashores, to stop talking about global warming. Stop talking about tidal surges. Stop talking about everything. This is fucking madness. You know it. I know it. And yet we allow it to continue, don't we? Now, when I say that, I guess I'm expecting millions of people to take to the streets like they do in other countries when they know that the government is treating them like shit. I realize that's not going to happen because we're Americans and, you know, we don't do that. Certain segments of our population do that. The ones demanding equal protection under the law or human rights or civil rights. But the vast majority of Americans, just for some reason, I want to say don't give a shit. I can't believe that that's true, but there's no action. Oh, every once in a while we'll have a massive march for some good cause. And what kind of government policies are changed by those massive marches? Zero, zip, nada, nothing, not a goddamn thing. And then we'll have another massive march. And what will change then? Nothing. The one hope, two hopes. The first hope is that this filthy son of a bitch, Brett Kavanaugh, is not confirmed as a Supreme Court Associate Justice. And the second hope is that rational people will turn out. You know, if we won't take to the streets in the million, by the millions to demonstrate, could we fucking please go vote on November 6th? Please. Now, I'm not talking about these right-wing halfwits. Of course, they'll be there. Their ministers will tell them they'll burn in hell if they don't support Trump and these Nazis. But I'm talking about rational people, normal people, Americans, not these fuckers who are co-conspirators in destroying the country. Please go vote November 6th or with your early voting ballot. Because if we don't, if the Republican Party continues its death grip, the American Fascist Party continues its death grip on this country, then it's fucking all over. I've said it before, and I'm not saying this is an idle threat. I'm not threatening anybody. This is just for me. This is just for me and my sanity and the sanity inside my family, because I can get very difficult to live with all this shit. I went through 8 years of this with Bush. I know it's not about me. I understand that. But I'm telling you something because you subscribe to this program. You tune in and listen. For the people who don't subscribe, you listen free. Okay, I've got no problem with that. But if this fucking political system of ours doesn't stand on its hind legs and throw these sons of bitches out of office in November, I'm talking about the House, I have no choice but to bail out. If you've paid in advance, I'll try to make sure that my business partners in New York refund your money. But I'm not going through this anymore. I cannot go through this anymore. This fucking monster, Trump, and his criminals, they're stressing so many people out in this country, including yours truly. Because if the Democratic Party cannot get control of the House in this November election, then the Democratic Party should be fucking disbanded and kicked to the ash heap of history. And let's all stand and sing some fascist song, because that's where we will be. We got one last chance here. This is it. That's just me. That's how I feel. That's how strongly I feel about this. The book's finished. I have a friend who has a degree in library sciences. I may have mentioned this. He was a librarian at Atlanta Public Library for years before he retired. And he understands the written word. He understands structures of novels and memoirs and so on and so forth. Earlier this evening, I took him all 312 pages of what I've written. and edited to a degree. You know, I've spent the past 5 or 6 days not editing, but rewriting. You know, you can't edit yourself. If you write, you have to have somebody else do it for you. And James is not an editor, but he is a reader. So, taking my life in my hands, I handed over 312 pages to him. Said, here it is, James. If you'll read it, tell me what you think. Now, what he has is what you don't. For those of you who have been following along with this strange journey through Kickstarter, you have unedited work. And some of it doesn't even exist anymore, some of what you have. As a matter of fact, when we posted the last big jumble of chapters, there were huge sections missing. I don't know how that happened. Somehow when we cut and pasted or put it into a Dropbox for our technical people to put up, it just got all fucked up. But what my friend James has in his hands this evening is what I consider to be a completed book, start to finish, 312 pages. And I will know in the next couple of days what this critical reader, a friend of mine, James, thinks of what I put together. Just so you know. Now, one way or the other, we are going to have a book launch party, book signing party. And it is going to be in the North Georgia Mountains. And we would like you to be there. We don't know when it's going to be or what the accommodations are going to be, but it's going to happen. I mean, if it's just me and Kathy and some of our friends. But I'd like you to be there. When we decide on a date and time, you know, the whole thing. In that vein, you can help by going to MikeMalloy.com and answering a couple of survey questions there. The best date, if you were to come, and the type of accommodations you would prefer if you were to come to this soiree. You can also pre-order a copy of the book while you're there, the finished book, not what I've been putting up at Kickstarter and you have been drawing down, not that, the real book. Okay. Earlier this summer, a woman named Christine Blasey Ford wrote a confidential letter to Dianne Feinstein. And in that letter, she said that this political operative, Brett Kavanaugh, he's not a jurist. He's a political operative. That's all he is. That's all he's ever been. That's all he wants to be. That's why Trump nominated him. Trump does not understand the judicial system. He does not understand the system of justice in this country. He understands nothing. So he appoints these useless fuckers or nominates them. And then the Senate, knowing what they have to do, these goddamn lapdogs, these destroyers, they go ahead and confirm people. Hundreds, did you hear me? Hundreds of federal judges have been nominated and confirmed. Kavanaugh is a thug, just like the person who nominated him. But Christine Blasey Ford wrote a letter to Dianne Feinstein, and in that letter, she said that Brett Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her. And it does count, even though it was 3 decades ago. You fucking right it counts. This is when they were both in school in suburban Maryland. And since Wednesday, when the story, last Wednesday, when this story broke, Christine Ford has watched as that bare-bones version of her story became public without her name or her consent. And it drew a blanket denial from Kavanaugh. Oh, the self-righteousness. Oh, I didn't even know who she was. So now, Dr. Ford, Professor Ford, she has a PhD, not an MD. Dr. Ford has decided that if her story is going to be told, she is going to be the one to tell it. What a novel idea. And speaking publicly for the first time, Ms. Ford said that one summer in the early 80s, Kavanaugh and one of his rich white buddies, both stumbling drunk, corralled her in a bedroom during a gathering of teenagers at a home in Montgomery County, Maryland. Ms. Ford says that while the punk Kavanaugh pinned her to a bed on her back and groped her over her clothes, grinding his pelvis against hers and clumsily attempting to pull off her one-piece bathing suit and the clothing she wore under it or over it, the rich white boy, Brett Kavanaugh's friend, the rich white boy friend, watched. Now, this rich white boy friend now says, "Hey, you're out of your fucking mind. That never happened. None of that happened." The same thing Brett Kavanaugh says. The same thing Donald Trump says. When Christine Blasey Ford tried to scream, according to her account, this shithead Kavanaugh put his hand over her mouth. Ms. Ford, now 51, and a research psychologist in Northern California, she said, quote, "I thought he might be inadvertently kill me. He was trying to attack me and remove my clothing." Ms. Ford said she was able to escape when Kavanaugh's white friend and good buddy and classmate at Georgetown Preparatory School, a punk named Mark Judge, jumped on top of the two of them. "Woohoo! Yeah, I'm going to get some of that too, Brett," which sent all three of them tumbling. She said she ran from the room and then fled the house. Christine Ford said that she told no one of the incident in any detail until about 6 years ago when she was in couples therapy or couples counseling with her husband. The therapist's notes, portions of which were provided by Ms. Ford and reviewed by the Washington Post, do not mention Kavanaugh's name, but say she reported that she was attacked by students, quote, from an elitist boys' school, who went on to become, quote, highly respected and high-ranking members of society in Washington. Notes from an individual therapy session the following year when she was being treated for what she says had been long-term effects of the incident show that Ms. Ford described, quote, a rape attempt in her late teens. And in an interview, her husband, Russell Ford, said that in the 2012 sessions with the therapist, the couples counseling, she, Ms. Ford, recounted being trapped in a room with two drunk boys, one of whom pinned her to a bed, molested her, prevented her from screaming. The husband said he recalled that his wife used Kavanaugh's last name and voiced concern that Kavanaugh, then a federal judge, might one day be nominated to the Supreme Court. Yesterday, of course, this is how this works with anybody associated with Trump. You deny, you lie, you deny, you lie, you act shocked by just the thought of this charge against me. Oh my God, you follow your leader, Donald Trump. So yesterday, the Washington Post got a statement that Kavanaugh issued last week. When the outlines of this woman's account became public, in the statement, he said this, quote, Kavanaugh did, "I categorically and unequivocally deny this allegation. I did not do this back in high school or at any time." Through a White House spokesfuck, Kavanaugh declined to comment further on Ms. Ford's allegation, and he refused to respond to questions about whether he knew her during high school. Yeah. And reached by email yesterday, the buddy who was in the room, Judge, the one who jumped on the two of them. Hey, give me some of that. Mark Judge, when reached on Sunday, Mr. Judge declined to comment. In an interview Friday with the Weekly Standard, before Ms. Ford's name was known, he denied that anything like this occurred. He said, quote, "It's just absolutely nuts. I never saw Brett act that way." He told the New York Times that Brett Kavanaugh was, quote, "a brilliant student who loved sports and he wasn't into anything crazy or illegal," end quote. But see, to these rich white boys, what the fuck is crazy or illegal about trying to rape a white girl? Well, you know, she's at a party in her bathing suit. What's illegal about trying to undress her and have sex with her? Oh, she's going to resist, but oh, give me a fucking break. You know they all want it, especially they want it from us rich white boys. They say, no, 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 no. Okay, go ahead. You just have to keep up the pressure. Remember when this was? 1981. Are you shitting me? Yeah, I know. The women's movement had reached a level of maturity by that point, but it hadn't settled down to high school girls. This particular high school girl was willing to fight like a son of a bitch to get these two animals off of her. But the two animals now, wow, what the fuck are you talking about? Nothing happened. Nothing happened. Christine Blasey Ford says that she will testify before Congress if that piece of human waste who runs the Senate Judiciary Committee, you know who I mean. Yeah, Grassley, that ugly old fucker. If he allows her to he may not allow her. Well, I don't know. You never know about the bitch, about the women. She also has said she'll be happy to take a polygraph test. Christine Ford is a professor at Palo Alto University. She teaches in a consortium with Stanford University, training graduate students in clinical psychology. Her work has been widely published in academic journals. Now, that doesn't mean shit to Trump or to this fucker Kavanaugh or these white men who don't give a goddamn about women. Are you kidding me? They know what women are for. Oh, I love my daughters. Yeah, I'll bet you do. Yeah, I'll bet you do. Every time Trump looks at Ivanka, you see the lust just bubble out of his face. Christine Ford contacted the Washington Post through a tip line in early July when it had become clear that this thug, this political operative, remember, Kavanaugh is not a jurist. He's a rich boy punk. He was one of the people who raised all kinds of shit and hell that gave us George W. Bush instead of Al Gore. Kavanaugh was one of the Gucci Brigade who went down to Palm Beach or wherever it was and started pounding on the windows where registrars were trying to count the votes. Kavanaugh was involved in helping John Yoo write torture memos. Kavanaugh is a fucking disaster. That's why Trump loves him. That's the only reason Trump loves him and wants him on the Supreme Court. So Christine Ford contacted the Post when it became clear that Kavanaugh was on the short list of possible nominees to replace Anthony Kennedy. And she contacted the Post before Trump made his selection, as if he made it. Now, the thing that the white men on the Judiciary Committee and in Trump's circle of monsters, the thing they're making the biggest issue about is Ms. Ford is a registered Democrat! Ah! And she's made, oh my God, oh my God! Small contributions to political organizations. Oh, no! Well, there you go. Around the same time that she notified the Post through a tip line, she also got in touch with her congresswoman, Democrat Anna Eshoo. And in late July, she sent a letter via Eshoo's office to Dianne Feinstein, the ranking Democrat on the Judiciary Committee. In the letter, which was read to the Washington Post, Christine Ford described the incident and said she expected her story to be kept confidential. She signed the letter as Christine Blasey, the name she uses professionally. And even though Ford had contacted the Washington Post, she declined to speak on the record for weeks as she tried to figure out how to deal with her concerns about what going public would mean for her and her family. You know how Trump just shreds people and Limbaugh and the Fox shit sewer and all of these bastards? A woman with a charge of sexual violence, rape, molestation, who knows that her violator was a Republican high up in the government, what fucking chance does she have to have her story listened to without these trolls and gremlins and sons of bitches who all work for Trump shredding her? She also wrestled with the idea of what she said was her duty as a citizen to tell the story. I'm sure every fucking Republican who heard that just kind of giggled. Oh, her civic duty. So Christine Ford engaged one Deborah Katz, a Washington lawyer known for her work on sexual harassment cases. And on the advice of the attorney, Ms. Katz, who said she believed Ford would be attacked as a liar if she came forward, Ford took a polygraph test administered by a former FBI agent in early August. The results which the attorney provided to the Post, concluded that Ms. Ford was being truthful when she said a statement summarizing her allegations was accurate. But by late August, Ms. Ford decided not to come forward. She calculated that doing so would really screw up her life and probably would not affect Kavanaugh's confirmation at all. She said, quote, "Why suffer through the annihilation if it's not going to matter?" God damn. Her story leaked anyway, as this kind of stuff does. And last Wednesday, The Intercept reported that Dianne Feinstein had a letter describing an incident involving Kavanaugh and a woman while they were in high school, and that Feinstein was refusing to share it with her Democratic colleagues. So shortly after that, Dianne Feinstein released a statement which said in part, quote, "I have received information from an individual concerning the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. That individual strongly requested confidentiality, declined to come forward or press the matter further, and I have honored that decision. I have, however, referred the matter to federal investigative authorities." Now, when you listen to that statement from Dianne Feinstein, can you imagine one of these filthy pig-fucking Republicans saying something like that? "I have honored her decision not to come forward." Shit. Dianne Feinstein sent the letter to the FBI. The FBI redacted Ms. Ford's name and sent the letter to the White House to be included in Kavanaugh's background file, according to an aide on the Judiciary Committee. The White House, whatever that means, sent it to the Judiciary Committee, Senate, making it available to all the senators. As pressure grew, the New York Times reported that the incident involved, quote, "possible sexual misconduct," end quote. And by then, Ms. Ford had begun to fear that she would be exposed. People were clearly learning her identity. A BuzzFeed reporter visited her at home and tried to speak to her as she was leaving a classroom where she teaches graduate students. Another reporter called her colleagues to ask about her. And this past Friday, the New Yorker magazine reported the letter's contents, but did not reveal Ms. Ford's identity. And then, almost as if, why, miracle of miracles, this old fucker Charles Grassley released a letter signed by 65 women who say they knew Kavanaugh when he had attended high school at Georgetown Prep. They knew him. Grassley had a letter ready signed by 65 women. Why, that makes me, your cynical podcaster here, to believe that Grassley had this all lined up when he got the letter back in July or the 1st of August. This idiotic-looking fucker who should have retired 30 years ago didn't let any grass grow under his feet, did he? Quick, get me these women. Find me some women or sign the letter. Quick, quick, quick.
Can I say something?
So that when the story did break, old Senator Grassley just reached into his jock strap and pulled out a letter signed by 65 women that said, "Oh, Mr. Kavanaugh was a nice man, not boy."
Yeah, and he went to an all-boys high school, so it's hard to dig up 65 women who knew you when you were a teenager and you went to an all-boys high school. That's impressive. But also, apparently, Politico's been trying to contact these women, and of the 20 or so they've been able to you reach out to, only two are standing by Kavanaugh. The other they've contacted said they don't remember signing that document and don't, you didn't know what it was for. They thought they were just supporting his nomination.
What are you suggesting, Kathy?
I'm just, Politico is saying that, you know, these women didn't know what they were signing. They thought they were just signing a blanket, like, yay, let's go Kavanaugh. Not, no, he never raped me.
In their letter, the women wrote, or they didn't write this, somebody probably hired by the Koch brothers had it written, they signed it. Through the more than 35 years we have known him, Brett has stood out for his friendship, character, and integrity. In particular, he has always treated women with decency and respect, except when he was trying to rape them. No, I added that. That was true when he was in high school and has remained true to this day. How the fuck would these women know what Brett Kavanaugh's private little... How many people knew, who are Catholic, that their priest was fucking little boys in the sacristy or whatever the hell you call that little area where the priests take boys to bugger them? How do these women know this? But anyway, as the story got out, and as these stories do, snowballed, Ms. Ford said she heard people repeating inaccuracies about her. And with the visits from the reporters, she felt her privacy was being chipped away and her calculation about what to do changed. She said, explaining her decision to come forward, quote, "These are all the ills that I was trying to avoid. Now I feel like my civic responsibility is outweighing my anguish and terror about retaliation," end quote. But, according to Katz, quote, "regrettably others did not." Ms. Katz said, quote, "victims must have the right to decide whether to come forward, especially in a political environment that is as ruthless as this one. She will now face vicious attacks by those who support this nominee." Yeah, that's where you and I live, Truth Seeker. We live in a fucked up country that is not the least bit interested in justice. Not the least. Ask any African-American. Go ahead. Go ahead. Do you know any? My dear white brothers and sisters, do you know any black folk? Do you? Okay, maybe somebody at work, not somebody have dinner with or go out for drinks with or, God forbid, date. Maybe just one of your coworkers who happens to be African-American. Ask that person. If we live in a political environment right now that is ruthless and will cut no one any slack whatsoever. In fact, if you're black and you want a little slack cut, you're going to be fucking shot down in the street. But I digress. After so many years, Ms. Ford said she doesn't remember some key details of the incident. She said she believes it occurred in the summer of 82 when she was 15, around the end of her sophomore year at the all-girls Holton Arms School in Bethesda. Kavanaugh would have been 17 at the end of his junior year at Georgetown Prep. At the time, Ms. Ford said she knew Kavanaugh and Kavanaugh's running buddy, Judge, as, quote, "friendly acquaintances in the private school social circles of suburban Maryland." Her school chums mostly hung out with boys from the Landon School, she said, but for a period of several months socialized regularly with students from Georgetown Prep. Ooh! Elevated little circles of white privilege. Ooh, well, I'm going to hang there. I'm going to hang over here. Well, who are you going to try to rape tonight? Well, I don't know. There's a girls' school over there, a girls' school. I don't know. I'll figure it out. Let me get fucking drunk, and then I'll figure it out who I'm going to rape tonight. Ms. Ford said she doesn't remember how the gathering came together the night of the incident. She said she often spent time in the summer at the Columbia Country Club pool in Chevy Chase. Columbia Country Club pool in Chevy Chase. You ever been to Chevy Chase? I've been there. I'm white. And the police and Chevy Chase looked at me like, what the fuck are you doing here in your ratty ass VW van? Now, these were pre-cell phone days, of course, and teenagers learned about parties like this via word of mouth. She also, Miss Ford, doesn't recall who owned the house or how she got there. And that means that pieces of human waste, like Grassley and Graham Cracker and some of these great Christian, white, male, conservative senators are going to rip her to pieces. You remember how you got there? Oh, and you want us to derail a nomination of a wonderful, glorious, family-loving man like Brett Kavanaugh? And then Orrin Hatch, did you see that smarmy son of a bitch today? He's not aging very well, is he? He's starting to look more and more and more like the turtle. Miss Ford said she remembers that the party was in Montgomery County, not far from the country club, and that no parents were home at the time. Miss Ford named two teenagers who she said were at the party, and those individuals did not respond to messages as of Sunday morning, yesterday morning. She said she recalls a small family room where she and a handful of others drank beer together that night. She said that each person had one beer, but that Kavanaugh and his rat partner, Judge, had started drinking earlier and were heavily drunk on their asses. That's my phrase. In his senior year yearbook entry at Georgetown Prep, Kavanaugh made several references to drinking, claiming membership in something called the Beach Week Ralph Club. You know, Ralph, that's when you throw up. And the Keg City Club. Ah! He and his rap partner, Judge, are pictured together at the beach in a photo in the yearbook. Now, Mr. Judge, the one who says, oh, bullshit, that never happened. He's written pieces for the Daily Caller, the Weekly Standard. He chronicled his recovery from alcoholism in a booklet called Wasted, Tales of a Gen X Drunk. And in that book, it described his own blackouts when he was drinking and a culture of partying among students at his high school. Kavanaugh is not mentioned in the book. But a passage about partying at the beach one summer makes glancing references to a Bart O'Kavanaugh, not Brett Kavanaugh, but Bart O'Kavanaugh, who, quote, puked in someone's car the other night and passed out on his way back from a party. Through the White House again, Brett Kavanaugh did not respond to a question about whether the name Bart O'Kavanaugh was a pseudonym for him, Brett Kavanaugh. You think? Miss Ford said that on the night of the party, she left the family room to use the bathroom, which is at the top of a narrow stairway. She doesn't remember whether Kavanaugh and Judge were behind her or already upstairs. But she does remember being pushed into a bedroom and then onto a bed. Rock and roll music was playing and the volume turned up high, she said. She says that Kavanaugh, who played football and basketball at Georgetown Prep with all the little other candy-ass white boys, held her down with the weight of his body and fumbled with her clothing, seemingly hindered by his being drunk on his ass. Kavanaugh's running rat partner, Judge, stood across the room, she said, and both boys were laughing, her word, maniacally. She said she yelled, she screamed, hoping that someone downstairs would hear her over the music. And at that point, Bart O'Cavanaugh clapped his hand over her mouth to silence her. And then Judge jumped on the two of them. And she tried unsuccessfully to get free. And then Judge jumped on him again. What a bunch of fucking white. This is white privilege you're hearing about here, folks. This is Jesus Christ. And with the second jump on, she broke away. She said she hid in the bathroom and listened until she heard the boys, quote, going down the stairs, hitting the walls on the way down. She said that after 5 or 10 minutes, she made her way through the living room and outside. She isn't sure how she got home. Miss Ford said she had not spoken to Bart O'Cavanaugh since that night. That's not what the article says. It says Ford said she had not spoken with Kavanaugh since that night, and she told no one at the time what had happened to her. She was terrified, she said, that she would be in trouble if her parents realized she'd been at a party where teenagers were drinking, and some of them were trying to rape. And she worried they might figure it out, even if she did not tell them. She said, quote, "My biggest fear was, do I look like someone just attacked me?" And she said she recalled thinking, quote, "I'm not ever telling anyone this. This is nothing. It didn't happen. And he didn't rape me." Years later, going through psychotherapy, Ms. Ford said she came to understand the incident as a trauma with lasting impact on her life. How come nobody has said yet in this article that what this woman is suffering from is post-traumatic stress disorder? That's what it sounds like to me, but I'm not a therapist. Ms. Ford said, quote, "I think it derailed me substantially for 4 or 5 years. I was very ill-equipped to forge those kinds of relationships." By that, she means she struggled academically and socially, and she was unable to have healthy relationships with men. She also said that in the longer term, it contributed to anxiety and, well, there it is, post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms with which she has struggled. She married her husband in 2002. Early in their relationship, she told him she had been a victim of physical abuse, the husband says. A decade later, he learned the details of that alleged abuse when the therapist asked her to tell the story when they were in couples counseling. That's according to the husband. He, the husband, said he expects that some people, upon hearing his wife's account, will believe that Kavanaugh's high school behavior has no bearing upon his fitness for the nation's high court. Russell Ford, the husband, disagrees. He says, quote, "I think you look to judges to be the arbiters of right and wrong. If they don't have a moral code of their own to determine right from wrong, then that's a problem. So I think it's relevant. Supreme Court nominees should be held to a higher standard." End quote. Christine Ford's husband. Now, what I just shared with you was written by Emma Brown at the Washington Post. I'm going to take a break. I'll be back in a couple of minutes. So the news today regarding this filthy Brett Kavanaugh and his filthy sponsor, Donald Trump, the news today is the woman accusing this thug, Christine Blasey Ford, has said, yeah, she will testify in public to a Senate panel considering the nomination of this would-be rapist. Kavanaugh said he will refute these scurrilous charges. God damn, this reminds me of the Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas confirmation hearing. I felt so bad for Anita Hill back then. Oh my God, I swear to God I did. I didn't have the consciousness, I guess, that I should have had about these issues. but I saw what I knew from just listening to the two of them, from listening to Uncle Clarence and listening to Anita Hill. There was no doubt in my mind who was telling the truth and who was sitting there lying their asses off. But I digress. And again, the attorney, Ms. Katz, told NBC's Today Show this morning that Christine Ford, quote, believes that if it were not for the severe intoxication of Brett Kavanaugh, she would have been raped. But oh no, not a nice, well-off white boy like Brett Kavanaugh going to an exclusive boys' school. Why, part of his privilege was to rape white, rich white girls. And if he really felt like slumming, he could find himself a not rich woman of color, girl of color. But there was something special for these rich white boys about forcibly having sex with a rich white girl. Shut the fuck up, bitch, and put out. Don't you know who I am? Good God. And that poor, miserable woman who is still White House counselor, Kellyanne Conway, said of Ms. Ford today, quote, "She should not be insulted. She should not be ignored. She should testify under oath, and she should do it on Capitol Hill," end quote. Well, how absolutely justice-seeking your statement is, Kellyanne. All right. When we come back after this break, I'm going to leave this horrible topic and talk about the continuing disaster that has struck the Carolinas and struck them hard. So stick around. I'll be back in a couple of minutes. All right. As promised, here in the second hour, As promised, here in the second hour, I know, while my brain is clearing, let me remind you again about what we're trying to do this fall. We will do it. I hope you're going to be included. Sometime in November, we're going to have a book signing or book launch party in the North Georgia Mountains, where there hasn't been the flooding that I'm about to talk about. The flooding that just ripped the hell out of North Carolina and parts of South Carolina. What a shame. Jesus, God. Anyway, in order to decide when to do this and what sort of accommodations, we'd like some input from you. This is not a commitment to attend this gathering, although I hope you make it, but it's to give us an idea of what date would work for you if you were to come and what kind of accommodations would work for you if you were to come. So if you go to MikeMalloy.com and vote for your preferred date, or indicate, not to vote, indicate your preferred date and your preferred type of accommodation. And if you didn't order a pre-order a book, don't worry, you can still pre-order one. This has nothing to do with Kickstarter. This is just between you and me. You can order a copy today, and I'll make sure you get a signed copy, signed by me, for whatever that's worth. All right? So just go to MikeMalloy.com and check it out. Oh, too much exercise this morning. I've got to move around a little bit here. It's a bitch getting old. You'll find out. Unless you already have. Now, the center of this hurricane that slammed into the country Thursday, Friday. The center of the storm, it's now a tropical depression, is out of the Carolinas. But the chaos that the storm caused, unleashed, and the death, is not finished. The rain that fell, the flooding, it was record-breaking rain, of course. Just about every rainstorm we have now is record-breaking, or a 500-year rainstorm that happens 2 years later again. Record-breaking rain. Rivers now are over their banks. And the rough part here, the bad part, the horrible part, the scary part, is that these rivers are going to continue to rise as the enormous amount of water that was dropped in the path of this hurricane, as it flows down out of these mountains. North and South Carolina, this part of North and South Carolina is very mountainous. And as this water flows down out of those mountains and into the creeks and into the streams and then into the rivers, even though the storm is gone, there may be blue skies, the flooding is going to continue. The rivers are going to continue to rise, which means people are going to continue to die. Property is going to be continue to be destroyed. The landscape of the area is very beautiful up there, is going to continue to be devastated. Now, the authorities in North Carolina and South Carolina and many volunteers are carrying out these rescue efforts. They're doing it by air. They're doing it by water. Any way they can get to folks that are desperately in need of being rescued. Thousands of people, if not tens of thousands of people, still remain out of their homes. God knows what they're going to find when they go back. The death toll has risen to at least 19. And one of them that's mentioned by the New York Times is particularly horrible for an adult. And that is the case of a one-year-old boy who had slipped out of his mother's grip after their car got stuck in floodwater Sunday evening, last night. I mean, it's horrible. I was near Charlotte, North Carolina. The search and recovery people have found this little boy's body. 1 year old. I can't help but wonder, and this is not a condemnation, this is not an accusation, I can't help but wonder why this mom was in a car with her 1 year old, given the circumstances up there. Again, it's just a wonder. It's a thought. She must have had a damn good reason. But I can't think of a good reason that would lead me to take a one-year-old and get in a car and drive into an area that is, the authorities have warned over and over and over again about flash flooding. But I'm sure she had a good reason, or what seemed like a good reason at the time. What a tragedy. Anyway, some late developments. Wilmington, North Carolina, which is a gorgeous city, population about 100,000. It really is. It's just a beautiful city with the what is that style of architecture, Kathy? Colonial? What is that?
Victorian.
Yeah, Victorian. That's what I'm thinking about. A lot of homes up there. Were built in the Victorian style. And they're just, you know, they're beautiful. Not so much now. Anyway, Wilmington has been cut off. And the Times says roads leading to it have submerged. Emergency officials are making plans to deliver supplies to Wilmington. They're going to have to do it by airdrop, helicopter, what have you, or boat. Some of the worries, including a threat to water service, whether or not water would be available to people, those worries apparently have been lifted. Evacuation orders are still being issued as rivers rise, dams are tested. Now, I heard this morning, I don't know when this was written, it's in the New York Times, it's dated the 17th. Today's the 17th of September, but it was probably written last night. I heard today that a dam in North Carolina that has withstood every single storm that the elements threw at it, that dam had, in the past had held, but it was breached and totally collapsed. I heard that earlier. I don't know if this is the one they're referring to. It says evacuation orders are still being issued as rivers rise and dams are tested. The authorities in Hoke County, west of Fayetteville, told residents late Sunday to flee due to the possible breach of the dam. Now, this is not a tangential story to the one-year-old who was swept away. That was near Charlotte, North Carolina. This is Wilmington. Parts of several rivers are already in what they call major flood stage and are continuing to rise. The rivers include the Cape Fear River, the Little River, the Neuse River, and the Rocky River. And I lived in Raleigh twice and went to school in Raleigh for a while. And I know this part of the state very, very, very well from having lived there. And you know, you live in Raleigh, you want to go to the beach, you head directly east, go out to the Barrier Islands off the North Carolina coast. And I haven't been there, I haven't lived there for 40 years, 50 years. I have to keep counting. How the hell old am I? But it still feels like personal. Road closures in the area are extensive, including parts of Interstate 40 and Interstate 95. 95, of course, being the main north-south artery from, Boston all the way down to Miami. Tornadoes are a threat today, or were a threat today, Monday. There were about two dozen tornado warnings in North Carolina before 8 o'clock this morning. And the center of this now tropical depression right now is about 125 miles. By this time, it's probably further than that. Southwest of Roanoke, Virginia, or closer to Roanoke, according to the National Weather Service. And forecasters expect this storm to continue to produce what they are saying, quote, heavy and excessive rainfall over the next couple of days, end quote, as it moves northeast and then out to the Atlantic. Here's the story then about the one-year-old that was mentioned here in the beginning of this article. The little boy's name was Caden Lee Welch. One-year-old fell out of his mother's arms on a flooded highway last night. Union County Sheriff's Office said in a statement, here you go. The mother drove around a barrier and into the rushing water. She went around the barrier. Just, you know, I don't want to say it in the time of this woman's tragedy, but what the fuck is wrong with people? I mean, what do people think when there's a barrier and beyond the barrier is water rushing across the road. And you drive around the barrier and into the rushing water. I mean, what the hell do people use for brains? Anyway, when she got into the rushing water, swept the car off the road into a tree. The woman managed to free herself and the son, who was in a car seat, and then she lost her grip on him in the rushing water. What a goddamn tragedy. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry for saying this. But this child's death was just based on pure fucking stupidity. I don't hold the mother. I mean, you can't fault somebody, I guess, for being stupid, can you? But how many times have we all been warned? When you see rushing water and you're in a car, don't fucking go into it. Because if you do, the odds are you're going to drown. And if you're holding a one-year-old because your car is pushed up against a tree and starts filling with water and you're trying to get out and you grab your kid and the water grabs your kid, who's going to win? You're not. The water is. Sorry. The Associate Administrator for Response and Recovery at FEMA said on Sunday, quote, "We want citizens to follow state and local warnings. There is a tremendous amount of flooding." And the governor of North Carolina, Roy Cooper, said that the storm, as of last night, quote, "had never been more dangerous than it is right now," end quote. And I think the reason, part of the reason for that is once the wind is gone, once the sky starts to clear, people will have the attitude, well, it's okay. Oh, look at the water rushing over there. Oh, well, that can't be too deep. Let's drive through it. Fuck, I just died. Compare this to what happened in Puerto Rico. And you know what? The only difference between the Americans in North Carolina and the Americans in Puerto Rico is that most of the Americans in Puerto Rico, if they speak one language, it's Spanish. If they're bilingual, it's Spanish and English. But that's the only difference. They even look just like the people in North Carolina. But in North Carolina, a response plan was triggered because of the floodwater that included thousands of National Guard soldiers. How many were in Puerto Rico? Dozens of aircraft. How many were in Puerto Rico? State officials are still conducting search and rescue, but they've begun to shift over now to search and recovery. The former being you're expecting live people, the latter being you're looking for corpses. Hundreds of thousands of people are still without electricity. Tens of thousands of homes are believed to have been damaged. Now, let me get real crass and inject some politics into this tragedy. Yeah, like that's never been done before. No matter what this pizza of shit in the Oval Office does this time, it's going to reflect on his inability to be where he is. Another enormous reason why the son of a bitch should be out of office and where he can go build your fucking buildings, or you don't even build them, or go nail your name on shit. Just, you know, go away, please. But if the rescue is massively successful in North and South Carolina, it will bring into sharp relief once again the difference of what happened in North and South Carolina and what happened in Puerto Rico. If the orange bastard's efforts in the southeastern U.S. fails and fucks up, it'll be another example of how incompetent he is to be a leader. He's not a leader. He's a thug. He's a gangster. He's a mafia don. Christ. And then on top of this, the and this keeps happening. This is all over the country. Because Trump is slowly destroying everything that this country has put together over the past 75 years. Listen to this. The superintendent of the New Bedford Whaling National Historical Park in Massachusetts. The superintendent of that place, National Historic Park, had signed off a year ago on a document, 50-page document, that outlines the park's importance to American history and whatever future challenges we might have. But then, the National Park Service's regional office sent an email in January telling the superintendent, No, now you're going to have to change some things. Here's what you have to change. He was ordered, superintendent was ordered by the National Park Service regional office, which is part of the Interior Department, which is being run by this filthy pig. What's his name? Ryan Zinke, who's another gangster. But the memo or the email said references to climate change and its increasing role of climate change in threats to this famous whaling port, it's right on the coast, such as flooding, which were noted in the draft that the superintendent had put together, has to come out. Get those references to global warming out. The draft put together by the superintendent, which acknowledged the science of what they were up against, and the email from these swine at the National Park Service Regional Office, everything was obtained by REVEAL. That's the name of the investigative unit. It's part of the Center for Investigative Reporting. REVEAL got this information in response to a Freedom of Information Act request. Wait till Trump destroys that. That stupid son of a bitch probably doesn't even know what it is. But the documents that were gotten by REVEAL provides a peek behind the usually closed curtains of this criminal gang that runs the United States. The documents reveal or illustrate how Trump's approach to climate change, which is it's not happening, how that impacts the way that park managers plan for future threats to the nation's historic parks, our national treasures. Trump doesn't give a fuck about natural treasures. If it's something he can't nail his name on, he doesn't give a shit about it. Nothing. This bastard doesn't travel for the sake of traveling. He doesn't read. He doesn't pay attention. He watches the Fox Sewer and probably hee-haw reruns or something. But this ignorant son of a bitch is just destroying everything. Come on, midterms. Come on, Democrats. Get control of both houses. Remove this filthy fucker from office. Dear God. And then the Center for Investigative Reporting, who put this article together that I'm quoting from, they talk about how the editing of the report reflects a pattern in the Trump administration shit-canning research and science and censoring Interior Department documents put together before this thug came to office that references climate change. This is exactly like what Winston Smith did, not quite as intense, but the same thing. It doesn't exist anymore. Climate change, down the memory hole, get rid of it. Now, according to what I have here, earlier this year, Reveal, the investigative unit, exposed an effort by Park Service managers, the Trump thugs, to remove references to human-induced climate change in a scientific report about sea level rise and storm surge at 118 national parks, all of which could be affected by sea level rise and storm surge. Take it out. Don't tell them anything. When the floods come and the surge comes, fuck them. This is madness. This is Trump. The Guardian recently reported on the Trump administration's efforts to stall funding for climate change research in the Interior Department by subjecting research projects to unprecedented political review by someone, an appointee who has zero scientific qualifications. What is he, a fucking car salesman? A door-to-door religious tract peddler? Who would Trump put to review the science and decide what goes in, what stays out? Not a scientist. In a survey by the Union of Concerned Scientists, government scientists reported being asked to stop working on climate change and connect your science to the industry's attitude. The industry being the industries that are destroying the planet. Can you fucking believe this? I mean, I sit here and talk about this shit. I don't know. It just makes me go ballistic. As you listen to this, I'm sure it does. These are just a few examples of science under siege, all of which is being compiled by Columbia University in its silencing silence tracker. They're keeping track of this. How much the Trump administration and these fucking Nazis who suck up to him, how much they're destroying, how much they're putting the country at risk and the people at risk, whatever the fuck happened to the oath of office he took? Why is he still there? The email that ordered the changes in what the park superintendent had written about climate change, that was sent by a person named Amanda Jones, a community planner with the Park Service's Northeast region. She wrote to the New Bedford Park superintendent, the person who had issued the warnings and the statements of awareness about, okay, we got to factor this stuff in. This is what Amanda Jones wrote to the superintendent, one Megan Kish. This is what Amanda Jones wrote. Quote, "You'll see that anything to do with, quote, climate change, end quote, has been highlighted in these documents. In a nutshell, we're being told that we can talk about climate change in terms of facts. If we have data to back our claim, that is okay. We should, however, avoid any speculative language like what may happen in the future." End quote. Speculative language? If I know, now listen, if I know that in this 3,000-foot mountain, let's say it's out here across the road from my house, and this 3,000-foot mountain has been proved by geologists to be unstable, and I'm living down here at the foot of the mountain, and I'm thinking, well, my people lived here forever. I'm going to stay here. And then the geologists discover that the mountain is so unstable that the goddamn thing is going to collapse anytime within the next 6 months. But it is going to collapse. There is no question it's going to collapse. And when it collapses, when all that debris, the rocks and the boulders and shit come rumbling down, it's going to come right into my house. So they come to my house and they say, yo, Mr. Malloy, you got to move. What do you mean I got to move? Because we've done the science. That mountain is going to collapse on your house. Is it collapsing now? Well, no, it's not collapsing now. You mean it may collapse in the future? Yeah. Because anything beyond now is the future. Well, then I don't want to hear about it. That's what these fuckers are saying. You cannot use language about what may happen in the future. It's astonishing. Scientists say telling park managers to avoid references to, quote, what may happen in the future, unquote, is worrisome. Yeah, right. There's another quote. Stephen Bessinger, he's a professor of conservation biology, University of California, Berkeley, who reviewed the emails and the edits in the New Bedford Report. And he called it, quote, irresponsible to future generations of Americans for the Park Service to direct managers to ignore research on the risks of rising sea levels, on the risks to endangered species, on worsening wildfires and other effects of climate change. They're not. The Interior Department is issuing orders. Don't you fucking talk about any of it. Thanks to Trump. Because Trump and every piece of shit that works directly for him does not have a clue as to what to do about anything except continue to spew out garbage and lies and misinformation to titillate and excite their base. Professor Bessinger said, quote, we should have confidence in scientists' projections and prepare for those kinds of scenarios. We can hope they won't happen, but we surely want to be prepared for them. We have to be looking at the future because places are going to be changing. And I'll tell you another reason we should be looking at the future, because whether or not this ignorant savage in the White House knows this or not, and I'm sure he doesn't, everything is in the future, you dumb fuck. Everything. Everything. Even the next time I say everything. Okay, I'm screaming and yelling. Kathy, if you could, give me a break. A comparison of the draft report written by the superintendent and the final document after the Trump bastard said, get that shit out of there, show all 16 references to climate change were removed. I'll be right back.
Liberals need to take responsibility.
Now, after all this bullshit about from the Park Service, which is part of the Interior Department, which is being destroyed by Ryan Zinke, who is a filthy thug working for this monster in the White House. You see how this chain works. After all that shit went down, Park Service officials involved in enforcing the New Bedford whaling park people to change everything, they didn't respond to repeated requests for interviews. They never did. I appreciate the fact that investigative pieces like that, they always put that in here, in whatever piece they're working on. Well, we tried to get X, Y, or Z to respond, and they just You know, in private, they say, well, they just told us all to go fuck off. But what they say for print is, or for broadcast, well, they didn't respond. Yeah, of course they didn't. However, a spokesman for the Park Service said he wouldn't respond to this bullshit that went down with change. Get that out of there. But this asshole said that parks are told, people working in the parks are told to, quote, address issues like climate change using the best available scientific information. In an email response to Reveal, the guy who said that is one Jeremy Barnum. Yeah, that figures. He says, sound management requires that we rely on specific, measurable data when making management and planning decisions. Climate change is one factor that affects park ecosystems, resources, and infrastructure. You like my answer? You see how I used a whole bunch of words to tell you nothing? I'm a Trump appointee. Mr. Barnum, wasn't it P.T. Barnum who said there's a sucker born every minute? And somebody else born to take everything away from him? Something like that. Barnum did not answer questions about what was deleted from the New Bedford Park Report in its original form. That original park report is known as a foundational document. It's kind of like a statement of principle or a statement of purpose. It's a foundational document. But Mr. Barnum said such documents are reviewed to ensure that they are consistent with current policy and directives. Fucking A. Has nothing to do with science, rationality, reality, logic, nothing. It has to do with policy directives that come from, well, you know, our exalted leader, Mr. Trump. So what is this park? Okay, let me tell you. The New Medford Park was created by Congress in 1996 to preserve 13 city blocks of a Massachusetts seaport that at one time was home to the world's largest whaling fleet in the 19th century. The park tells the broader history of American whaling. Okay, there was a time when the whales were so numerous, who gave a shit if we slaughtered millions? No, no, millions of them. We needed their oil. It's always oil, isn't it? Flooding from rising seas, increased snowmelt and stormwater, larger storm surges, and extreme heat waves are among the threats from human-caused climate change to the park's historic structures. But Trump and Zinke, historic my fucking ass. They don't care about history. What historic? What's historic? The only history Trump cares about is how badly and unfairly, it was so unfair, the Confederate South had its ass kicked up around its shoulder blades when it insisted on maintaining enslaved people. That's all Trump cares about, because those are good people. Those slaver descendants, those are good people, you know. Just because they carry the swastika, just because they are part of the KKK, just because they want to continue their shit, those are good people. But you fucking climate change people, you are bad. There's no history. What history? Has this little ass 13 city block area ever flooded before? Well, what makes you think it's going to flood again? Well, that's where I'd step up and tell them about the mountain across the street from my house, the 3,000-foot mountain where the geologists say, it's going to collapse in the future, which starts now. 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 See, the future's always here. Now. There's more future. Here comes some more. Now. The original draft obtained by this investigative unit, Reveal, was dated in 2017. It was signed by Ms. Kish. The final version was signed by Ms. Kish and someone named Gay Vietsky, a regional director of the Park Service's Northeast Region. It was signed June of 2018. It's not yet available online. Among the sections highlighted for review and then deleted were references to climate change that were put in the report in charts, and it outlined the real threats, future threats, to the city, the town, New Bedford's historic structures, its port, its natural resources. See, the Trump administration and this fucking cannibal Zinke, they want people to be totally unaware, totally unprepared, because nothing's going to happen. Everything's fine. Maybe Trump will build a casino in New Bedford, Massachusetts, and put his name on it, huh? This sentence was removed in its entirety. Listen up. This was in the original report put together by conscious human beings who want to preserve and at the same time protect by being aware of what the future may hold with climate change. This is a sentence that was removed. Sentence was removed. Quote, climate change and sea level rise may increase the frequency of large storms and storm surge, rising groundwater tables, flooding, and extreme heat events, all of which have potential to threaten structures. End quote. That was removed. Here's what it took its place. Large storms and storm surge, rising groundwater tables, flooding, and extreme heat events all have the potential to threaten structures. What happened to the climate change part? Whew! Gone. And in several places where the term climate change was deleted, this was put in its place. Changing environmental conditions. I can go dig a fucking garden in my backyard and I have just effected changing environmental conditions. I moved the dirt from here to there. A little different from the mountain coming down on my fucking house because of climate change. Oh, well. Also deleted, a mention of how development near the park could, quote, impact character and ambience of historic district. Elsewhere, reference to gentrification is replaced with urban renewal. Mentions of declining Park Service funding and the limited control the managers have over privately owned businesses in the park are also removed. You have a historic park, National Historic Park, put a fucking McDonald's in the middle of it. Or Chick-fil-A. The guy that started Chick-fil-A was an uber Christian. Everybody works for him. They're supposed to be Christians. Let's put a Chick-fil-A right in the middle of it. The museum in the park, which contains ships and skeletons and whaling artifacts, is privately owned. The January email suggests that the edits in this foundational document are part of a broader review of foundational documents that this woman, Vietsky, assigned a Park Service official named Ed Clark to conduct for the Northeast region. Any national park on the seacoast, inland, in a mountain, it doesn't make any difference. Any national historic area, Makes no difference. Maybe the Old North Church, where Paul Revere watched for the one of by land, two of by sea. I don't know. Is that still there? I know the steeple came down in a storm some time ago. Maybe they should get rid of that fucking thing, too. I mean, that's history. Nobody cares about history in the Trump administration. Anyway, the January email suggests that the edits are part of a broader review of foundational documents that Gay Vietsky assigned a Park Service official named Ed Clark to conduct for the Northeast region. The Northeast region includes 83 national parks in 13 states, all of which are now fucked because of Trump. Then there's a quote, I guess this is from Parks Department. Quote, the late review came at Gay Vietsky's request when she began her role as regional director. Ed Clark was asked to review all foundation documents for sensitive language that may raise eyebrows, especially with the current administration. Get rid of language that may raise eyebrows. What the fuck does that mean? That may raise eyebrows, especially with the current administration. The Trump bastard. There it is again. And then, of course, you have this usual. Scientists say climate change already is affecting parks and that the threats will increase if people continue to release greenhouse gases, blah, 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 blah. Let's take a break, Kathy. One more example of hundreds, thousands of what this Trump son of a bitch is being directed to do. They're not coming out of his fucking empty head. But what he's being directed to do by people like the Koch brothers who want to destroy everything. I'll be right back. It's just such a sad thing that we live in a time when science is so denied. The only time I can think, and I'm not an historian, so I may have be totally out of my league here, but the only time in my readings of history that this happened before was during the so-called Dark Ages. And it was called the Dark Ages for the obvious reasons. But for Europeans anyway, the Arabs kept experimenting in math and science and the applied sciences. But for the white people, the Europeans, science did not exist anymore. Diseases were caused because, you know, God was just so fucking pissed off at somebody. You know, I know what I'll do, God said. I'll give him some hideous disease. No, I'll tell you what. I'll just drop the Black Plague all over Europe and kill millions of people. Fuck them. You know, that's anything that happened that resulted in human suffering was attributed to the fact that people were not being religious enough and that God in his infinite sadism was their God was extracting vengeance. You know, it says in the Bible, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Fucking right. There's a lot of fun when you're a god and you can just fucking eliminate whole races of people. But I digress. So here we are again in a modern equivalent, I think, of this the whole Dark Ages mindset that science is bullshit. I mean, listen to these right-wingers. Listen to them. Cause and effect doesn't exist to them. Action-reaction doesn't exist. I wonder when Trump is going to declare that the laws of gravity are unfair. They're just unfair. And to be alive in these times and be a young person, which obviously I am not, but to be a young person in these times, I mean, what kids who are in school right now who are learning math and science, I have one who's in high school, freshman, learning math and science, among other subjects. And there are millions of American kids like that who are learning math and science. And the leadership of this country is telling these kids, if they're paying attention, maybe they're just saying, oh, fuck that guy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I hope. But the administration, the Trump administration, wants kids who are in that time in their life when they're most susceptible most available to learning, they're also susceptible to bullshit. And the Trump administration is dumping oceans of bullshit. And that bitch who runs his education department, oh my God, who wants to get rid of all science and replace it with biblical horse shit. This must be a terrible time. I talked to Molly about it. What do you think about this stuff? And her attitude is, Daddy, we just ignore it. We just ignore it. I hope that continues. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.